We are headed for that great wonderful country. We've told the land of sin, we're through going to our new home.
Home of yonder.
God's word is about that, we treasure it fondly.
We travel
this great caravan, keeps on rolling along.
We're happy,
we are traveling o'er the trail that is winding.
It's winding
all the mountains and through the valleys below.
To heaven,
bubbling springs of pure living waters we're finding.
To strengthen
this great caravan, keeps on rolling along. Dangers all along lurking in the dark shadows
around us,
we will never fear. Christ is always alone,
protecting.
He will never refuse to captain our battles.
He's with us
while this caravan keeps on rolling along.
We're happy,
we are traveling o'er the trail that is winding.
It's winding
over mountains and through the valleys below.
Oh, to heaven,
bubbling springs of pure living waters we're finding.
To strengthen
this great caravan keeps on rolling along.
We're happy,
we are traveling o'er the trail that is winding.
It's winding
over mountains and through the valleys below.
Oh, to heaven,
bubbling springs of pure living waters we're finding.
To strengthen
this great caravan keeps on rolling along.
Welcome to another Bible lesson brought to you by the Hamilton Church of Christ. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, there hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. Here we learn that Christians have a way to escape from temptation. Any temptation we have, it's a temptation that other people have had before us. It's common to man, and God will make a way to escape. So if we just look for that way that God has made for us to escape, then we can not have to go through the terrible sin that goes with temptation. We invite you to join us today in our Bible study.
If you could own all the world and its money, build castles tall enough to reach the sky above. If you could know everything there was to know about life's game, yet you know nothing until you've known God and His love. Until you've known the loving hand that reaches down to fallen man and lifts him up from out of sin where he has run. Until you've known just how it feels to know that God is really real, then you've known nothing until you've known the love of God. If in your lifetime you could meet everybody, and you could call every name from here to yon, but if you've not come face to face with Jesus and His saving grace, then you've known no one until you've known God and His love. Until you've known the loving hand that reaches down to fallen man and lifts him up from out of sin where he has run. Until you've known just how it feels to know that God is really real, then you've known nothing until you've known the love of God.
In our last lesson, we finished the 28th chapter of Genesis. So now let's begin Genesis chapter 29. In these next three chapters of Genesis, Genesis 29, 30, and 31, we have the story of Jacob's 20-year-long stay away from the land of Canaan and away from his home. And we need to remember that he was in his mid-70s when he left home, 75, 76, 77, somewhere along there. And so he would be almost 95 to 97 when he returned back. And in terms of aging, during the time of Jacob, the lifespans were longer than they are now. And so this age would really be equivalent to about half that age nowadays. Even so, he was still well along in years to be leaving home for the first time and to be looking for a wife. But that's the case here. And a lot of the Bible writers and the commentators treat this period of Jacob's life as though it was a punishment for his treatment of his brother. They treat Jacob as though he were an impostor and a thief. They treat him as though he had actually left God and was surprised that God appeared to him at Bethel. And so they think that he deserves the treatment that he gets at the hands of Laban. However, when we look at this thing, we see that for the most part, these years with Laban were prosperous years and were happy years. He had the normal troubles that you would expect any believer to have, seeking to follow the Lord, troubles similar to what we would have today in a lot of ways. He did receive some treatment from Laban that was not good. Laban did deceive him and did defraud him. That's very true, but he seemed to have survived that all right. And we see, though, that during this time he had a job. He was permitted to marry the daughters of Laban, and it was possible for Jacob to build up some extensive holdings of his own while doing this. He didn't leave there a poor man. He came a poor man, but he went away a rich man. And when I say he came a poor man, he didn't have any of the possessions of his family with him when he came. And so we begin chapter 29 then and read the first verse. Then Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. This is a real simple statement about the remainder of the journey after he had the vision at Bethel. He might have stayed at Bethel for a while, but not very long because he had a journey to make here. And so he went on his journey. And this phrase that he went on his journey actually means that he lifted up his feet. That's the literal translation of this. He may have had many different experiences and trials and problems and all while on this journey, but the Bible doesn't tell us any more than this. And he came into the land of the people of the east. You know, he prayed that God would give him a safe trip over here and a safe trip back home. And that evidently is what happened. He did have a safe trip to this place. It's called the land of the people of the east. This is the area of Haran. He has to cross the Euphrates River. This is territory that Jacob's never been in before. And this is a long ways from home, especially when you're traveling like he was. Verse 2 says, and he looked, and behold, a well in the field, and lo, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks, and a great stone was upon the well's mouth. So the first thing he saw when he got into this vicinity was this big well and three flocks of sheep lying by it. Now evidently, this was a well that was a community well for the local shepherds, and they could bring their flocks of sheep there to be watered. They might have had to do it in some kind of an order where that they took turns, and maybe the ones who came first were served first. But when he got there, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it, and here was the well that they watered the flocks out of, but there was a great stone over the well's mouth. This stone was somehow or other protecting the well, either protecting things from being thrown into the well or falling into the well, or protecting it from those who were not authorized to use it, or it could have even been some stored water that was protected by the rock. But at any rate, this stone was there, and it could not be used while the stone was covering the well. And Jacob was kind of surprised at this. Here they are in the middle of the day. These flocks are just laying around waiting for water. Nobody seemed to be doing anything. And verse 3 says, and thither were all the flocks gathered, and they rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the sheep, and put the stone again upon the well's mouth in its place. So this is the way they watered them. Rolled the stone away, they watered the sheep, and they replaced the stone. And so these three flocks that he saw were probably just three different shepherds, probably young men or boys that were tending the flocks, who were waiting in line for their turn to get the water. And they weren't in any hurry about it. They weren't worrying too much about the sheep, but they were going through this routine of getting water for their sheep. And verse 4 says, and Jacob said unto them, my brethren, whence be ye? And they said, of Haran are we. So he calls them brethren, and that's probably not meaning that they were actually kin to him, but these were probably people that definitely spoke the same language that Jacob spoke. The language of Haran was Aramaic or Chaldee, and was evidently a language that was well known to Abraham, and therefore also to Isaac and Jacob. And so these people could speak to each other in the same language. Now, we're not told how the caravans and those who travel back and forth were able to communicate. They may have been good linguists and knew each other's language and had learned several languages, or maybe that they had an interpreter that would speak for them. But here it's easy for Jacob to communicate with these people because they were speaking the very same language. So he calls them brethren. My brethren, whence be ye? And they say, we are from Haran. And verse 5, and he said unto them, know ye Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, we know him. Now, of course, Laban is his uncle, his mother's brother. That's who he's trying to find. And these people are among the first that he's accounted here. And they say, we know him. They know his uncle. And he said unto them, is he well? That's the first question. How is my uncle? Because he'd never seen his uncle. He'd only heard about him. And he might imagine that he would be in many ways like his mother. He was his mother's brother. And as you know, brother and sisters are the closest kin of any family. They're closer kin to each other than parents to the children are. And so they're the very most close kin. So here was somebody that was most close kin to his mother. He'd never seen. So he asked, is he well? And they said, he is well. So they give him good news. Yes, he's well. And behold, Rachel, his daughter, cometh with the sheep. And so they're telling him, his daughter's going to be here. His daughter named Rachel, she's going to bring the sheep. So she is actually acting as a shepherd here, or a shepherdess. And which means that she was an industrious person. She had good intelligence, know how to handle these sheep and take care of them. And it may be that Laban had several flocks, and he had to use his sons and his daughters to take care of the sheep. But at any rate, Rachel was doing this. And so he knows from the very beginning here that here's a girl who is industrious, who's capable of working and being responsible, and she's been entrusted with the father's sheep. And he will have a chance to meet her soon. She's coming with the sheep. Verse 7, and he said, lo, it is yet high day, neither is it time that cattle should be gathered together. Water ye the sheep and go feed them. So Jacob has a suggestion here. He doesn't like what they're doing, in that he thinks that they're mistreating the sheep, that they should be more industrious about taking care of them. He said, it's middle of the day here. It's not time that they should be gathered together. It's not time for them to be laying down and not doing anything. Water the sheep and then go let them eat. Feed them. And they said, verse 8, we cannot until all the flocks be gathered together, until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep. So it seemed that they had a certain time of day that they could water the sheep, not just any time. And there had to be a kind of a ritual of moving this stone away from the well so they could do it. Maybe it took more than one to do it. Maybe it took several to do it. Maybe there's only a certain time of the day that they could do it. But at any rate, they tell Jacob, we can't do it now. We have to wait until they roll the stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep. So there's a process we go through, and you're not familiar with it, Jacob, so we can't take your advice. And really, Jacob shouldn't be interfering anyway with their business. They knew how to take care of their sheep the way they'd been doing, but he wanted to do it a different way, the way he'd been used to doing at home, evidently, and not let them lay in the middle of the day and not be eating. Verse 9, and while he yet spake with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she kept them. Now, this phrase, for she kept them, means she was a shepherdess. She was responsible for them. She was in charge of them. And so here comes Rachel. And this is going to be the first time that Jacob lays eyes on Rachel. He might never have even heard of her before. But she is the daughter of Laban, and she's going to be his cousin. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. Now, three times in this verse, we have the phrase, his mother's brother. So he's very interested in the fact that he is now doing something for his uncle that he hasn't met yet. He goes ahead and rolls the stone away. He's not going to wait for others to come and do it. Maybe he's stronger than the others, but for some reason or other, he proceeds now to roll the stone away. He's going to show all the strength that he has. He's performing for Rachel, too, at this particular point. And he's kind of taking matters into his own hand and going to give all the help that he can give. And so he rolled the stone and watered the flock. Verse 11 says, and Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. This verse seemed to show some strange behavior on the part of Jacob. We do not believe this kiss was a lustful kiss. This was a kiss of greeting, because we're going to see that later on Laban kisses him. And he lifted up his voice and wept. So he made some kind of a loud noise here. He lifted up his voice and he wept. He was so pleased, so glad, so happy that he now made contact with his family. And here was this beautiful young girl, very appealing to him. It seemed like he fell in love with her at first sight. He really did have a strong attachment to her now, and he just met her. Verse 12 says, and Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's brother and that he was Rebekah's son, and she ran and told her father. Now, the King James words that in a way so that it doesn't really sound accurate, so I'd like to read what the NIV says on verse 12 there. NIV says on verse 12, he had told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah, so she ran and told her father. So now it seems that Rebekah is getting excited. She learns that this is her aunt's son, so it would be her cousin. And so she runs and tells her father that here's a relative that's traveled a long ways and come to see us. And she seems to be excited about this also. So verse 13 says, and it came to pass when Laban heard the tidings of Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. So Laban is excited. He is glad to see Jacob. He runs to meet him. That sounded like enthusiasm. That sounded like somebody's energetic. Somebody's anxious to make a contact. He runs to meet him and embraced him and kissed him. So here again we have the kiss. And this type of a kiss, even though it's the kiss that Jacob gave Rachel wasn't a kiss of lust, nevertheless you had to have some kind of close attachment to make a kiss like this. And of course relatives could do it. And here it is between Laban and Jacob. And he brought him to his house. And he told Laban all these things. He told Laban what he'd come for. What his life had been like. Told him about Abraham. He told him about his father, Isaac, and about his mother, Rebekah, whom Laban had not seen for 90 years or so. And so this had to be an interesting conversation. It had to be something that Laban was most interested in hearing about. This is news of home folks, of my family, that I hadn't heard it from for so long. And, of course, both men were very interested in what each had to say and learning more about each other. Verse 14, and Laban said unto him, surely thou art my bone and my flesh. You're my kinsman. You're somebody close to me. You're my bone and my flesh. You're somebody that I can have a close feeling toward here. And no doubt he had a great love for his sister Rebekah. And Rebekah had left just all of a sudden whenever the servant came to look for the wife for Isaac. And here now is coming back the fruits of that union, the son, Jacob. And so he said in verse 14, and he abode with him the space of a month. Remember, Jacob had come for a few days. He was going to be sent for by Rebekah when the coast was clear to go back home, when Esau's anger had cooled off so that he was no longer threatening to kill him. But this is going to turn out to be much more than a month. This is going to be a 20-year stay. Verse 15 says, and Laban said unto Jacob, because thou art my brother, shouldest thou therefore serve me for naught? Tell me, what shall thy wages be? So he's going to work for Laban. And Laban says, just because you're my brother, I'm not going to take advantage of you. I want to pay you. My kinsmen should deserve to be paid for the work that they do, just like a stranger should be. So you tell me what your wages are going to be. What do you want me to pay you? And Laban had two daughters, verse 16 says. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. It seemed that during this month that Jacob had been busy around the place. He'd been working. No doubt helping with the family business, maybe primarily handling the flocks. And this would keep him near Rachel so he could visit with her as much as possible. And his love for her would grow during this time. He soon knew beyond any doubt that this was the woman he wanted to marry. After he'd been there for a month, Laban offers to pay him with a regular salary. And Jacob immediately proposed that if Laban would give him his daughter, it would be worth 7 years of service as far as he was concerned. Evidently, Laban had found that Jacob was a willing and able worker, and that he was someone good to have around to help with the business. And he also realized that Jacob would eventually come into a substantial inheritance of his own. He had the birthright from Esau and Rebekah. And he'd also been able to notice, probably without too much trouble, that by this time Jacob had a strong attachment for Rachel. And he saw that there would be many advantages to having him as his son-in-law. He wanted to bind Jacob to him in some way, and he rather craftily let Jacob name the terms himself, and realizing that because of Jacob's desire for Rachel, he would get a better bargain this way. 7 years of free service by a man who was an exceptional worker was quite a windfall for Laban, and especially in view of the fact that he would have been very happy to have Jacob marry into his family regardless. Even if Jacob hadn't done the 7 years of service, he probably could have gotten Rachel for his wife. Laban, therefore, immediately agreed to Jacob's offer. Whether at the time he had already been planning this later deception he practiced on him, in which he gave him Leah instead of Rachel, we don't know that, but it's quite possible. He may have been hoping that Leah would also find a husband in the meantime. Verse 17 says, Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. Now, these two women were sisters, and we have to believe that Leah wasn't that much more unattractive than Rachel was. This phrase, tender-eyed, doesn't really mean that she had poor eyesight. It simply means that her eyes were not as lustrous, maybe, as Rachel's were. It could also mean that her eyes were more delicate than Rachel's were, that she might have had more fair-colored eyes, lighter eyes, than Rachel had. But it's not really a statement that would make Leah less beautiful because of her eyes. Verse 18 says, And Jacob loved Rachel, and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Verse 19, And Laban said, It is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. So Laban thought it was a good deal. It's better for you to have her than me to give her to somebody else. Both of his daughters were apparently well beyond the age at which women usually married, and Laban may have become quite concerned about finding a husband for Leah, the older sister. According to Laban's later explanation in verse 26, it was contrary to strong custom for the younger to be wed before the older. And since Leah may have been able to find a husband, both she and Rachel remain unmarried. Laban certainly should have explained this to Jacob at the time of his proposal, but he kept it to himself, not wishing to lose the opportunity to have Jacob to work for him and to get him into the family. Rachel was both beautiful in face and form, much more so than Leah apparently, and was much more desirable in the eyes of Jacob. Since they were sisters, as we said, there must have been some considerable family resentment between them, so that Leah could not have been too homely. The only specific weakness that is mentioned is this fact that she was tender-eyed. And as we said, this does not mean she was weak-eyed, as some have interpreted. It could simply mean that she didn't have the dark and lustrous eyes that Rachel had, or it could even refer figuratively to Leah as a woman of compassion, one who would weep easily at something that made her emotional. It's not clear why she had not been able to find a husband. Quite possibly it was because none of the eligible men of Haran were acceptable to her father. Her father might have been the one who was so picky that she couldn't find a husband. But at any rate, this is the situation. The older woman and her younger sister, but Jacob in love with the younger sister, not the older woman, but yet Laban wanting the older woman to be able to have a husband. We're going to see here that a great advantage was taken of Jacob. But Jacob was weak in the sense that he was in love with Rachel. And he would make most any kind of an agreement if it turned out that the agreement permitted them to eventually have Rachel. And so he fell for this plan of Laban. And Laban definitely mistreated him. He definitely misled him. And he defrauded him. But it seems that Jacob didn't mind all that much. Verse 20 says, And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days for the love he had to her. He was so much in love with her, so much in hopes of having her to be his wife, that this 7 years were just a few days, because he got to work around her and see her and be close to her, evidently, and so it just seemed like time was flying. This wasn't really work to him. This was a pleasure. This was something he liked to do. This is something that he was enjoying, getting to be close to Rachel while serving and working for the 7 years. And so we can see how emotion can enter into our judgments and make us have a judgment that's not very good, and make us even get the bad end of a deal because we're blinded by the fact that we're looking at the emotional end of it. He's looking at the fact that he's working for the fact that he's going to obtain Rachel and not seeing how that he's being misused and abused. This was an abuse of him. This was a misuse of him. But he didn't see it because he was emotionally involved with Rachel. And so today we can make decisions when it comes to falling for someone that we think we want to marry, and we get so emotionally involved that we don't see the forest for the trees. We don't see what's actually happening to us. We may be going in for a situation that's bad for us, that's going to be adverse to us, but we don't care because we're emotionally involved. So the emotions can blind the good judgment. That's what happened here in the case of Jacob. But we'll continue our story in the next lesson. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.
What can he do with a life that's steeped in sin? What can he do with the hope of life within? Lift up the fallen man out of the sinking sand, through Calvary's saving plan. That's what he can do. What can he do for you? Though helpless, sad, and blue, he'll do what other powers can never do. Hear every time you pray, drive all the clouds away, turn darkest night to day. That's what he can do. What can he do when the chilling hand of death lays hold on you and you draw your final breath? His power will still abide, guide safely o'er the tide to Canaan's happy side. That's what he can do.